new faces that we need to know, but we are still the same committee. Maybe with the exception of Honorable Wilson, but it's not the first time that we are meeting. At an appropriate time, I will tell you where to press so that you are then able to. And then welcome. I think you are fortunate you have arrived at the time that you're supposed to be here. You are 10 minutes early for that matter to start your presentation. But thank you very much. Over to you. There's an on and off button.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So I think the committee will remember me as the chairperson of the board of the NHLS, Professor Eric Buch, and I'm a public health medicine specialist by training. We have two other board members with us. One is still trying to find his way through the nighttime security entrance, but Nelisiwe Mkhize is one of the chairperson of our Human Resources Committee, and she herself is in the field of laboratory work, and Dr. Tim Tucker, who's a hematologist, and he chairs our Academic Affairs and Research Committee, and you'll see him walk in looking flustered in a short moment. With me is also Dr. Kami Chetty, who I think you'll know from before. She is our acting CEO of the NHLS, and next to Nelisiwe is Tashin Adoki, who is the acting CFO, and behind us is Violet Gabashani, who does some of our strategic planning work. So that is our team for today. Madam Chair, I will provide an overview, a very brief overview, and the acting CEO will do our full presentation, and our team is here to answer any questions. I thought I should just clear up one or two things before we turn specifically to the strategic plan, because you've asked us about them before. I can tell you that the disciplinary cases against the CEO and CFO are well underway. We have another 6 days of hearings over the next month. It's been a very long set of hearings, and as I've said to you before, as soon as we have findings to report, we will inform you and come and report to the committee in full. The case of the head of internal audit, We have just received, as of yesterday, the findings from the chairperson, but the proceedings are still continuing, so I'm not quite yet in a position to report to you on that. Just to say again that the supply chain manager and the financial manager resigned when the disciplinary charges were presented to them, and I can also say that the CIO, the Chief Information Officer, has left the NHLS. As is required by us, I've said to you before that we have reported the matter to the Chief Procurement Officer in the National Treasury, the matters, and also laid charges at SAPS. So just to clear that up. The other thing you'll be very pleased to hear is that we have reached a settlement agreement with Gauteng to settle the outstanding debt to the NHLS, and you've asked me about that more than once before, and we have a proposal that we've made to KwaZulu-Natal for consideration of settlement on their outstanding debt, and I'm pleased to tell you that the provincial payments to the NHLS have improved in this financial year. You'll remember that previously this was a matter of great concern to the committee. And overall, our finances are more stable, but we still have work to do in this regard. So this is not a meeting to do our performance evaluation, but just to reassure you that we continue to make good progress on governance, on oversight, on performance and finance, and on our procurement HR and IT systems, but that's for later in the year. And I think today what we're trying to do is to focus on the next steps that we are working on to further enhance the NHLS and to address the challenges and the excellence in many areas that we have. I think when you look at our strategic plan for this financial year, you'll recall that last year when we presented to you, it was very soon after I'd been appointed as the chairperson of the board, and I hope that you have noticed what we would call a refreshing improvement in the strategic plan that we are presenting to you today. The process has been quite intensive. It's a product of four board workshops and different elements of it, and intensive work by the executive team on the NHLS. And this was not something we did just because it was a statutory requirement, but because we believe that there's a huge value add of a well-thought-out strategic plan and annual performance plan. Now, in our view, strategy is about doing new things, or doing things differently to get better value for the public money that has been entrusted to us. And we believe that the strategic plan we're putting before you today, and the CEO will elucidate on, the acting CEO, will show how we've sharpened and improved the strategy and what we're planning to do different and better and to build on the work of the past year. And we've also built that into the APP. You'll also notice that we continue to give ourselves challenging performance targets while we're only asking for a tariff increase that is aligned to general inflation, even though medical inflation is higher than that. And that means we're going to have to perform especially well and very efficiently to achieve the performance targets that we'll be putting before you, but we're really committed to doing this and to continue to enhance the performance of the NHLS in the service of our country. So with that, I'll just hand over then to the acting CEO to take you through some of the detail of the plan, and we've tried to keep the presentation fairly tight so that even though there are a large number of slides, many of them will move through quite quickly because committee members have had a chance to review the plan.
Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members. I'm just going to run through the strategic plan, some of which you will be quite familiar with, but as the Chair has said, there's been an intensive process of re-looking at the strategic plan, and you will see that the strategic plan is a lot clearer. We're very focused on our targets, and there's been some coherency around the strategic goals. So our vision has changed from what has previously been presented. What we were quite keen on is ensuring that in the vision we have it very patient focused. Previously the patient hadn't been mentioned, and often in pathology services, because we don't see patients all the time, only in certain disciplines, we tend to ignore the patient focus. So that's been put up front. We in our vision, we're looking at efficient patient-centered services and a global center of excellence for innovative laboratory medicine. We thought this was quite important because we've also got institutes we internationally recognize, and therefore we strive to be this global center of excellence. The mission has also changed. We've now looked at putting in how the services is delivered. So our mission is to provide quality, affordable, and sustainable health laboratory services through an integrated network of laboratories. We thought it's quite important, again, that we bring in the integrated network of laboratories and the provision of training for health science education and execution of innovative and relevant research with a focus on patient care. It's quite long and lengthy, But again, it's brought in all the elements of how we're going to be achieving that vision. Chair, can I pause so that the Chair can just introduce the new member of the board?
Well, I had introduced him in his absence, Dr. Tim Tucker, who's a member of our governance committee as well.
Chair, with regard to the values, we haven't changed this much because those values we still hold dear. But what we've brought in is greater emphasis, and you'll see this in the strategic plan, around the issues of ethics and integrity. So we've strengthened that component of our values, but I'm not going to go into details around the values, Chair. It's in the strategic plan and hasn't changed much. Our legislative mandate remains the same. And again, I'm not going to go into details around the legislative mandate, but I think importantly what we have done is to make sure that we have looked very closely at the National Development Plan and its vision, and looked at how the NHLS strategic plan aligns itself to the National Development Plan, aligns itself to the principles around a national health insurance. What we haven't put in into the legislative mandates, which we'll do now, is because of the timing of the strategic plan, is the NHLS Amendment Bill, which is going to really make a fundamental difference to the NHLS going forward. Chair, we've cut back on the situational analysis a great deal. There's a lot of detail in the strategic plan, and you will notice that in the previous strategic plan, the situational analysis has changed quite a lot. What we've attempted to do in the situational analysis is to create a picture so that anyone who's reading the strategic plan will have a very good idea of the pathology services in the country, because previously that kind of information wasn't as well analyzed. So, and we've also taken the format that has been recommended by Treasury in looking at the organizational environment, the governance environment. But just to give some highlights, I'm sure that a number of the other parastatals would have also commented. The population has grown, and this is definitely going to be creating increased pressure, not only in the public healthcare system, but on the laboratory and pathology services. We all are well aware that HIV and TB remain priority diseases, but particularly so in the NHLS. Because we've got what's called a national priority program where we assist the Department of Health in making sure that we provide as quickly as possible and as timely as possible, but also ensure that we've got a national coverage with regards to HIV and TB. And if I can just say that the programs around HIV and TB are very, very dependent on how well we perform in the NHLS in order to give timeliest results around viral loads, CD4 counts, etc. We've given you some of the stats. With over 7 million people, South Africans are infected with HIV, and about approximately 4.3 who are on antiretroviral therapy, there has to be continuous monitoring from a laboratory perspective in order to monitor the individuals, and we're doing this really well as the NHLS. But importantly, what we've put into the situational analysis is that it's predicted that by 2010, the non-communicable diseases will kill more people than communicable diseases. And we're keeping that in mind to ensure that the NHLS is going to be prepared for the diagnostic services for non-communicable diseases.
Thank you.
Did I say 2010? Yes. Sorry. That's already gone past. It's 2030, sorry. Okay. Just brief steps on the situational analysis and the resources that we have. So we've got a network of about 268 laboratories spread across all the 9 provinces, about 10 central, the national central laboratories. We've classified them according to the classification that the minister has published in the Government Gazette. We've got 17 provincial tertiary laboratories, 42 regional laboratories, and 199 district laboratories. We've also got institutes. The one which you well aware of is the National Institute on Communicable Diseases. And the NICD is well-renowned for its management of outbreaks, the Ebola outbreak. They were an integral part of the management of the outbreak, and the recent one is listeriosis. And Chair, just to say that, linked to that, we've also got a central data warehouse, which really is one of a kind in the whole of Africa and also internationally with the amount of data that we've got there. So we have the ability, the NICD, as one of our institutes, have the ability of when there was a suspicion of the listeria outbreak, when the clinicians thought that there was something going on, that we were able to go back and plot and then see the epidemic curve. So, and that's something that we are concentrating on for the future. I've mentioned already that the National Priority Program is supporting the programs on TB and HIV. And just to say that we've got 16 laboratories for viral load and for early infant diagnosis. We've got 52 CD4 laboratories and 207 laboratories for gene experts. The management structure, the Chair has alluded to it. The Board is the accounting authority in terms of the NHLS Act. That's going to change in the future, Chair, as you know from the NHLS Amendment Bill. And I don't need to go into details. The CEO is appointed by the Board, but that's also going to change in the new bill. We've got the detailed organizational structure in the strategic plan. We thought it would be useful for us to just highlight some of the key challenges in human resources. The issue of recruitment and retention of skilled professionals is a problem. That's something that we are trying to address. We've got a lot of our professionals who are migrating or are being actively recruited by the private sector in the country, and I'll show you some stats around that, as well as some leaving internationally. I've just given you some quick stats of our staff complement, which grew from about 3,500 to we've just got just over 7,000 now. Our total cost of compensation has increased from approximately 500 million to about 2.1 billion. And we've just given the percentage increases in the personnel expenditure. But this is not just due to benefits for the personnel expenditure. It needs to be noted that we did have KwaZulu-Natal that got incorporated into the structure some time after we had started. And then there's also been issues of insourcing as well, and we've also grown the service across the country. So that is also partly attributed to the increase in personnel costs. Just some quick stats. We train approximately 234 registrars per year. The training is done by our academic partners, and we do the placement within the NHLS. And then we've just given you some stats around the in-house training offered to some of our intern scientists and medical technicians. I'm not going to go into details around that. Chair, we will be giving you more details around the finance if we do have time. We said that in the situational analysis, we did say that the revenue was going to be approximately, we forecasted around 7 billion, but that's because the strategic plan was done during October and November. If the committee wants, we've got more updated slides on what the situation is right now. Chair, then just to round up on the issues around the situation analysis, we thought that it would be quite interesting to provide you with some of the stats on the differences between the public and the private sectors. We didn't do the table, but you can, I'm sure you can look at the comparison. So in the private sector, the key players are AMPATH, Pathcare, and Lancet, the three major laboratory services, and you've got a whole number of other laboratory services which we've listed, but the three comprise about 90% of the market. There was a presentation done by the National Pathology Group, which represents most of the private laboratories, to the Competition Commission, and we're just quoting what they've quoted to the Competition Commission. They employ about 10,000, approximately 10,000 employees, with about 295 pathologists, and I'm not going to go through all of the details. 50 medical scientists and 300 medical technologists. And they've got a lot more nursing sisters because they have an end-to-end service. So they draw the blood and, you know, take it all the way through. That's not how we do it in the public sector. The people working in the wards are the ones who take the blood. They do approximately 3,000 tests per day, which comes to about 78 million annually. But the private pathology market services 20% of the population. And if you compare them to the NHLH services just over 80% of the population, you will see that we've got 7,000 staff, employees altogether. So they've got more employees. They've got more pathologists. The medical scientists is about equivalent. They've got more medical technologists. They've got more medical technicians. And the number of tests that we perform is around 91 million annually. So from that, there's a lot of you can see that the differences in the tests. We are still unpacking it, but obviously the private sector for the population size does a lot more tests than what we do. So we're very carefully managing those tests, and we are able to service 80% of the population with fewer staff, and that needs to be noted. Chair, then, in looking at the strategic outcome-oriented goals, we've dramatically reduced the goals from what we had, well, not dramatically, but what we've done is we've integrated the goals, and we've tried to create and make it a lot more logical so that there's no overlaps between the goals. But we also wanted to ensure, Chair, that any person working in the NHLS is going to be able to voice what is the goals that we that we're looking at. And you'll see that it's quite simple to articulate. So the first goal is we want to look at a modernized and accessible laboratory service. I'm not going to go into details around the goal statements there. The second goal is for us to have academic excellence in training and research. The third is to ensure that there's sound governance and improved stakeholder relations. The fourth is to ensure an effective, efficient, and ethical organization for improved service delivery and the implementation of the NHI. And again, the emphasis is around an ethical organization. Then we have pulled out from the effective and efficient organization. We thought it's important that we have a goal that looks at efficient financial practices, and that we have a goal around HR on a skilled and competent and motivated workforce. So we've made sure that the goals are simple, everybody is able to articulate it, and we've given you the goal statements, Chair, for each one of that. So what we've also done, which hasn't been done previously, is to link the strategic objectives to the goals, because the format that's used by Treasury is you've got your strategic objectives that's slightly separate and linked to your programs. So we've now shown you in the strategic plan as to how we move from the strategic goals to the strategic objectives and then apply it to the different programs. And you'll see that cascading throughout the strategic plan. Okay. So what we've done here is then linked each of the goals to the strategic objective and show how it links to the different programs. So program one is administration, and it contains the financial management, HR, the executive management services, AQUA, etc. The strategic objective that we have under program one is to firstly have an effective financial management system and ensure also effective financial management policies and practice. The second strategic objective is to improve revenue collection, our billing systems, and improve the liquidity position of the NHLS. Then it's to develop and implement the National Procurement Plan. Chair, I just need to highlight here that whilst we've worded it in such a way that it sounds that it hasn't been done, a lot of these processes and practices have already started being implemented. So where we say develop and implement the National Procurement Plan, that's one of our strategic objectives, but we've already started and worked on that. The second program is around governance and compliance. It's the strategic objectives is the audit opinion of the Auditor General and getting a clean audit outcome. It's to strengthen the oversight role of the board, and it's to have an effective monitoring and evaluation system. I'm not going to go into the objective statements. It's just a further explanation, Chair, because we won't have enough time. And for the NHLS, one of our key sort of challenges that we have is with regards to the IT system. And so our strategic objective is to look at a modernized and efficient IT system. And again, there's been a lot of work that has been done in order to improve that, because naturally, laboratory services are completely dependent on having an effective laboratory information system. Still under Program 1 and Administration, it's a sub-program of Human Resource Management. Strategic objectives have changed here quite a bit. The first strategic objective is to look at appropriately trained human resources in adequate numbers to staff the services. And there's a lot of work that's been done to look at this. Then the issue around a human resource plan and a workforce planning tool to determine staffing norms and training needs. That's a bit more evidence-based and scientific. And then we also look in the other strategic objective is an integrated performance management system in order to retain staff. As I've mentioned, some of these have been continuing as strategic objectives over the years, so there has been work done, but we're not reporting on progress at this meeting, Chair. Under Program 2, we've got surveillance of communicable diseases and this is a lot of the work that gets done through the NICD, and we're looking at a robust and efficient communicable disease surveillance system and outbreak response. The next strategic objective is training and research in surveillance and communicable diseases. The NICD is responsible for the training of field epidemiologists. So that's one of our strategic objectives. The next one under Program 3 is the National Institute of Occupational Health, which is the occupational and environmental health and safety. The strategic objectives are similar to the NICD, so we're looking at a robust and efficient occupational and environmental health service, and then research and training, which we're quite involved in occupational and environmental health and safety. Chair, I'm just going to run through these strategic objectives because I think that the indicators are important. Under our Program 4, we've got Academic Affairs, Research and Quality Assurance. The sub-program of quality insurance, our strategic objective there is the improved quality management system. And then under the sub-program of academic affairs, our strategic objective there is to look at improving our pathologist national coverage and the availability of pathology health professionals to have an improved training platform and to develop and implement a national research agenda for laboratory services and the NHI. And this is important, Chair, because we're shifting the focus from just doing pure academic type research or communicable and occupational health research to looking at the operational type research for laboratory services, but also looking at how the NHLS can ensure that we assist in making the NHI a success. I've mentioned that already, Chair. And then under Program 5, it's the laboratory services. Our strategic objectives there, some have remained the same because we think it's important. The first strategic objective is to have improved turnaround times. The second is to ensure that our laboratory services are well equipped and functioning at a level that provides accurate and reliable results timeously. And then we've included a strategic objective where we want to look at the effective planning, management, and operational capacity of the laboratory services. So we're going to be looking at the laboratory structures, the role and responsibilities, what's the best type of organizational structure in order to deliver our services efficiently. Chair, then just to try and go through the annual performance plan as quickly as possible. We have provided the expenditure estimates in the in the strategic plan. You will notice that there's a spike in 2016-2017. The CFO will expand on that during the discussion, but that's the Auditor General had asked us to make provision for the doubtful debt, and so that's an accounting issue where we would be, because of the debt to Gauteng and to KZN, we had to make provision for it in 2016-2017. You also see from the graph that in 2012, the expenditure was increasing higher than the revenue, and a loss was experienced in that year. I've mentioned about the provisions made for the doubtful debt, and you'll see that from the projections for 2018 to 2020, the expenditure in relation to the revenue will be managed better. So that's the commitment that we're making. Just to say, we've in the strategic plan, we've also said that At the time when we had written it up, $833 million was owed at the end of October 2017. We had been invoiced for 1.2 billion rand worth of goods, and we paid 1.4 billion to all suppliers. So that's just to give you an indication that we are managing the suppliers a lot better. We make sure that all SMMEs are paid, and then we have a payment plan for the other top suppliers. So we actually have now reduced the debt by paying a bit more to the suppliers in the previous financial year. Okay, so it means we paid approximately 219 million to the prior year debt, and we've committed to reducing that. Then just some of the other estimates. The goods and services expenditure will increase from 1.56 billion to 1.8 billion approximately in 2018-19. We're forecasting that our volume will increase by 1% overall. That's because of the electronic gatekeeping that we've instituted, which effectively should be reducing the volume. And the tariff price increase that we've requested from the ministers of Minister of Health is and the provinces is 5.7, which is just slightly above inflation, and we've motivated the reasons why. Our personnel expenditures also we forecast will increase from 3.3 billion to 4.1 billion in 2018-19. And Chair, I need to emphasize that this is the budget planning. We carefully control our expenditure dependent on what cash we get into the organization. But we had planned this budget because of insourcing, the back payment of the salary adjustments that we agreed to with labor, and the filling of critical posts which we didn't fill because of cash constraints. So we had planned a budget around that, but dependent on whatever our cash flow is, we carefully manage even the filling of critical posts. And you can see it in the difference between us and the private sector. This is just an indication of the test volumes and our costs. I'm not going to go into detail around it, but as I've mentioned, we're forecasting a 1% increase with regard to that, taking into account the priorities of government, because there will be certain of the tests, like with HPV, that will also be increasing. We've provided you our income and expenditure statement. Just looking at over the medium-term framework, our test revenue that goes from 7.6 to 8.6 in 2020. And then what our total revenue would be, because we get our revenue comes from what we charge for the tests, but we also get revenue from grants, and we get revenue from interest, dividends, and rent on land, as well as transfers that we receive. We've provided you the breakdown of what our the how much we'll be paying for the compensation of employees. We've done a very careful calculation around some of this. And we go from 3.8 to 4.4, and we've just given you the breakdown for our materials, our goods and services, and the surplus and that we will be predicting over that period. Chair, I'm not sure whether you want me to go through every target that we've got in the APP, but what we've done with each one, so under financial management, you'll see that we've kept some of those indicators the same. We've looked at the ratio of current assets to current liabilities, and we try to maintain that at 2.6. We look at the other indicators, the cash flow coverage ratio. We've kept that at 2 times. We've given you what the baseline is. It's just too difficult to put it into the slides. And our percentage of material to sales. We are trying to look at the reduction of our creditor days so that we reduce it to about 50 over the MTF period, and also reduce the number of debtors days. Importantly, one of the things that we put in is a new indicator, the contract management system, because at the moment we don't have a contract management system. We've just implemented a new one over the which we've started on. So this is going to create a lot of efficiencies around the contracts, and we're also looking at we've created a new indicator around the turnaround time for the awarding of tenders. I'm not going to go to all details around that. Around governance and compliance, we're looking at a clean audit opinion, and this had been debated as to whether, you know, halfway through the year, whether it will be possible to get it. But we are going to move from having an unqualified audit to a clean audit. So that's the target that we've set ourselves. And we also, there's an issue that had been raised previously. We've now put in an indicator to say we are going to be having an effective monitoring tool to look at measuring the compliance of the board's decisions and resolutions. So this had come directly from the portfolio committee, and to indicate to you that we've put that in. And we also, because of the issues that are happening, are looking at the code of conduct and the ethics policy. So we've put that in as another indicator. The other indicator that we've strengthened is to look at having a very effective methodology to collect and collate information for a monitoring and evaluation system. And again, that has been something that has come up from the portfolio committee, because we need to have an effective monitoring and evaluation system in order to look at where we've been wrong and to be able to take corrective actions immediately. And then the integrated reporting system, again, directly from the portfolio committee, we've put this in as an indicator to show that this compliance with some of the governance practices. Then around information technology, some of these have been there previously, and I'm not going to go through the details. We committed that the IT strategy will be approved this financial year. That's come from previously, and we've kept it in. We're also looking at a number of outputs, the dashboards, the analytics in the IT system. And then we also just want to make sure that our systems, the uptime for our systems, are kept at a high percentage. Okay. Under human resources, we've changed the indicators here quite a bit. So we're looking at the staff turnover ratio, the staff recruitment, the turnaround time for staff recruitment, the employment equity targets, and the compliance with performance agreements, and we've given you targets there. We're also looking at the training program, the number of employees trained according to the workplace skills plan. We've put in a new indicator on a human resource plan and the workforce model. And then we've also looked at the integrated performance management system. On the surveillance of communicable diseases, we've given you some targets there on percentage of identified prioritized diseases under surveillance, how quickly we respond to outbreaks. We're looking at our SANAS accreditation of the NICD laboratories. We want all of them to be accredited. And importantly is around the population-based cancer surveillance. And because I've mentioned the growing burden of disease around non-communicable diseases, we want to maintain our WHO reference laboratory status, and then the number of publications that we produce, as well as the number of field epidemiologists that's qualified. Very similar then in occupational, environmental health and safety. So it's the number of tests that get conducted within a predefined turnaround time. I'm not going to go through too much of detail, but it's the number of assessments that have been done, the number of surveillance reports, number of articles, as well as the training that we do. Okay, Chair, this has been debated also in the Portfolio Committee before. It's AQUA, around quality assurance. What we've done now is use percentages in certain instances, but we've also changed the indicators to include numbers. So it's the percentages of central laboratories and tertiary laboratories that are SANAS accredited. We've then included the regional laboratories with accreditation status, as well as the district laboratories. There's a thing called proficiency testing schemes, performance for the laboratories, and where we test the laboratories themselves for their proficiency, and we kept that as a target. And what we've included now as an indicator is to do a gap analysis of our laboratories as to where they aren't accredited and how we're going to take them forward and ensure that we sort out some of those gaps. Academic affairs, we've changed the indicators, whereas previously we said the number of students and registrars and medical scientists, technologists that pass. But the pass rate is not our primary responsibility, it's the universities. Our responsibility is to make sure that we give proper placement and training for the NHLS. And so we've changed the indicators to indicate that. We've given minimum numbers a year that has to be reached, but as part of our initiative, we'll be looking at a lot more than the numbers that we've provided here. We're also looking at the number of articles published, as well as I've also already spoken about the research agenda that we want to develop. Under Program 5, Operational Efficiency in Laboratory Services, we've included indicators here that go beyond just the National Priority Program. So you'll see it's TB indicators, CD4, viral load, but you've also included other things now like FBC, UNE, your cervical smear, and the turnaround time for those. We're also looking at a tracking system for the pilot specimens, and I've spoken about the laboratory structure and looking at the organogram. So Chair, those are the APP indicators. I've run over them quite quickly. There's more detail in the strategic plan. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. The weakness with all the academics and the scientists is to we like to use abbreviations. FBC, maybe not all of us will know what FBC and UNE is. So, just a.
My apologies. So a full blood count is FBC. So that basically just checks your hemoglobin. Dr. Tim Tucker is the hematologist here.
If you have a patient you think might have anemia, or you think if a patient has an infection, you have full blood.
My
So you would then do a, my apologies to you. So if you had a patient that needed to assess whether they had anemia or if they had an infection, you would normally do a full blood count, and it's done by the hematology laboratory. The U and E that Dr. is another test which is regularly done for to see what the kidney function is like. So they're very common tests in the laboratories.
E is urea and electrolytes.
I don't want to be a medical technologist by default, but I'm just raising those because at times we take them for granted. And fine. I think you have come to the end of your presentation, honourable members. There is the presentation. Any questions? Can I have indication? Honourable Wilson, Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Ndaba, Honourable Maisel, Honourable Mahlalela, in that order. Honourable Wilson, Honourable Mapanga, Honourable Ndaba, Honourable Maisel, Honourable Mahlalela.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a couple of questions. In terms of your comment that by 2030 non-communicable diseases will kill more people than the communicable diseases, and that you need to prepare and manage in advance for that change in current situation. And taking into account that you said and the private pathology market that you gave us statistics on, how is the NHI going to affect this? Because I should imagine that when we have a whole lot more people on NHI, the pressure is actually going to increase quite substantially, and that is just around the corner. So if you can give us some idea of what effect the NHI is going to have on that. On page 14, one of your targets was that 100% of hospitals, let me just get to page 14, it was a target you set, it's on your strategic outcome orientated goals. Sorry, I don't know if I'm working from the same doc, but principally you said to provide 100% of hospitals with pathologist cover by 2020. That's 2 years down the line. What percentage of hospitals have currently got pathologist cover now? I think that's quite important. And also in the same line as that, it was 1.3 page 18 of the presentation I've got, is that you would have to have appropriate and functional equipment and supplies to support uninterrupted service delivery, and that was part of the goals you were setting yourself. What is that situation now? Do we not have appropriate and functional equipment and supplies? Same thing on page 21, you would have to, your goal is to ensure that there's sufficient staff and supporting services to provide services. How short are you now if you haven't, if you've got a plan or goal, set goals for sufficient staff, how understaffed are you now? On page 26, and sorry, I'm working from my presentation, so I don't know if you're working from the same one that you are, and yet I was following it. The strategic objective was to develop and implement a national research agenda for laboratory services and the NHI. And this was to increase the knowledge base on diseases and influence the decisions that it takes to diagnose, treat and care for these diseases through research outputs and articles and explore opportunities for innovation. Again, connecting to the NHI. How much work needs to be done? When you've got to increase a knowledge base on diseases, one has to question, well, why doesn't everybody have that knowledge base now, and what effect is the NHI going to have on that? And I know that we are currently employed an awful lot of doctors in various districts as part of the NHI pilot project? And do they have the knowledge that you were talking about in under this particular goal? I think that's quite important. And then finally on page 44, and that deals basically with SANUS accreditation, ensuring that your various laboratories, whether they're regional, central, or tertiary laboratories, are SANUS accredited. And the reason why I'm raising this, because you've given us your estimated performances for 2019. You have not given us where you stand at 2018, and this is why I'm asking the questions, because I don't have a comparative, as to why so many... It creates a perception by not having the 28 figures that a lot are not SANUS accredited, and that is a concern, because if they're not SANUS accredited, what are they accredited for? Are they recognizable laboratory services? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Let me follow the suit by welcoming the presentation. Chair, mine is a clarity-seeking question with regard to the performance indicators in all programs, from Program 1 up to Program 5, for the various years, which is 2019, 2020, and 2021. Why the performance target remains the same? Because I think they should be increasing each and every year to show progress, which will mean that you are progressive. Secondly, Chair, currently, as a country, we are under a severe pressure, which is caused by the listeriosis outbreaks. The minister resolved to recall all the affected enterprises' products, which is now affecting negatively the business community, in particular the emerging ones, in the spaza shops, everywhere, in the streets. So the question that I want to put forward is, what are the lessons learned in the case of listeriosis outbreaks? Lastly, Chair, it's on slide page 43. The numbers of student intent registers under supervision, it's 25. Unfortunately, your performance indicator for 2018 is not reflecting in your presentation, but on your APP it's 25. So the question I want to put forward in this regard is, what is the rationale for such a small number? To me, the 25, it's not satisfactory. I thank you.
Honorable Ndaba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think I don't want it to sound like as if I'm lamenting what the honorable member has spoken in terms of, have raised in terms of performance indicators. I think, Chair, as the portfolio committee, we need to be convinced the manner in which the performance indicators are planned for by NHLS, because all of them, I don't want to say maybe this is cut and paste, but I want to be convinced on what is the rationale of these performance indicators, because for me, we can't have a performance indicator in 2018 that will be planned as new. What does new mean? whereas in, even in 2014 it was written as new. What does that mean? Does it mean there's no performance at all? You know, nothing is happening or what? Maybe they need to explain why were they capturing it like this, maybe all these years. If we have, it was not captured like this in 2016, maybe I didn't see it. But from what the report is telling us, you can see that from 2014 it has been written new, and now in 2017 it has been written new, and 2018 is written the same thing. And this, Chair, is a concern. And again, Chair, when you look at the other ones, number of field epidemiologists qualified is 14, but for 2018-19 they are planning for 5. Is it because they don't need them or what? Why are they planning for 5 when previously they were planning for 14? I don't know whether this 14 means previously the ones that qualified were 14 or what, but why are they planning for 5? This time, if can they can tell us, Chair, what is the problem? And then with regards to Napisa, not Napisa, man. Yeah, what are the practical steps taken in preparation of the migration of NICD to Napisa? The other one, Chair, if they can give us reasons of not investing adequately on IT infrastructure. In terms of the Auditor General's report, Chairperson, regarding irregularities, can they tell us what is the progress now? Have they addressed some of the issues that the Auditor General have raised? Or what is happening? Kevin. And then the last one, Chair. How is NHLS addressing recruitment and retention of skilled professionals? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Maisel.
Thank you, Chair. We would like how far you have gone with transformation in the NHLS. And do you have any timelines with which you would have completed at least some discernible transformation that has taken place? It is very important that this is done. It looks like in every, what you have, you say you divided your work into whatever, 7, 5, 4. And every one of it is a strategic objective. I mean, you can't have 10 strategic objectives. You have one objective, strategic objective, and you use other strategies to operationalize and to try and get it done. But if everything is a strategic objective, then I don't know. It's a hackneyed type of word that you have been using here now. It loses its meaning and its objective. It's no more objectively an objective. So please correct that one. You said there is some gatekeeping initiatives by the provincial departments of health. That's why there is 1% volume what? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. what type of gatekeeping is this that's taking place? Well, the rest I can afford to skip now because somebody will deal with that. You did a SWOT analysis, and there are a lot of opportunities there. And I read through that. I haven't seen what it is that you just put them, what it is that you're going to do to achieve those goals. It is just nice to do SWOT analysis and put it there that we have done it. And there is nothing to indicate what measures you are going to take to sort out the problem, the weaknesses and things all like that. We would like to know so that we know that in your APP these things are there, you are going to deal with them. If they are not there as some things that you are going to deal with, it's no use putting them in your paper, right? What have you insourced? You said there is a problem with insourcing some resistance and things like that. What it is that you have insourced? Because ideally you have to insource everything. It's only something that comes up that cannot be insourced or that was not insourced. That should be a problem. But the majority of things that you need in your NHLS labs can be insourced. Almost everything can be insourced. Even the chemicals that you need, you can have them in stock, and it saves you a lot of money. Initially, you'll spend a lot of money buying them to put them in stock. But rather than having to buy them every time you need them from somebody who puts, what you call it, who adds some money on it, what they call it again, if you add something on something that you buy. Yeah, you understand what I mean. You buy something and you sell it to somebody, you increase the price so that you get your profit on that. But if you got that in stock, it will save you money. And also you know what you have, and you can try and replenish it when you know you are running down. You can have a central brokerage house which supply all the other provinces and districts. That will save a lot of money in the long run. So, and it can be doable, unless it is these gatekeeping problems that somebody says is my tender and sort of. So that can be done. You say people resist change. Of course, change must be resisted. If you are in my comfort zone and you want to take me to a new zone that I'm not familiar with, I will resist. But it is this type of thing that brings about development. If something is at equilibrium and there are no contradictions, it will not develop. It will go nowhere. So appreciate that and find ways of overcoming it so that you get progress and development. Contradictions are a leitmotif of development. If there are no contradictions, you are not going anywhere. That's why you keep on repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes, which is a hallmark of madness. So if you have these contradictions and manage to overcome them, you'll have development. In adequate training, in virology, hematology, and human genetics. I think hematology and electrolytes are your basic your basic reasons why you have those NHLS. Without those basic things that you are supposed to be doing, it will be useless to actually have the laboratory set up. You may as well get to the private laboratories for some exotic tests and so on and so on. But this, if you can't just do those little basic things like that is frightening. And the other reason is that maybe when, because there is inadequate training, is because of lack of registrars. If you don't have registrars, nobody is going to train anybody adequately. So it goes without saying that if the less registrars you have, when the other pathologists go to the greener pastures, you'll have nobody. And as a result, the whole system is going to collapse. It will still take 5 years, and you'll have nobody trained. And if you pick up somebody, he will just charge you a leg and an arm, because you'll have no choice but to do that. So preemptive measures can save a lot of tears in the future. The SWOT analysis. But let me not try to say everything that I wanted to say. I think what I've said is enough to make us to ginger something that can turn. In fact, South Africa trained most of the world-renowned pathologists, and because of the nature of our climatic conditions, tropical diseases and things like that. And I'm just wondering what is going on. It looks like maybe somebody is doing slow motion reversal of all the gains that we had. So please, let us do something which is doable and which we are capable of doing, and which is not something new, which we have been doing in the past. It is just now that is beginning to, when we should actually be doing with enthusiasm. Because before, there were deliberate barricades for blacks not to penetrate that, not to do it. And it was a deliberate state policy to stop blacks from doing it. Even if you can do it 110 times, you still remain not recognized. So now, here we are. Why don't we get our children to get into these things and do it? So we can't say we're running short of candidates. Let's do it. Thank you.
No. Thanks. Maybe before I raise what I want to raise, I just want to make an observation and just get the clarity whether it is an omission the expectation from the ATP is that you are going to have, as you have done, the strategic objective, your performance indicators and annual target, which is in terms of the median term framework. And then once you've done that, the next step that is expected is that you need to have quarterly targets for that financial year, which is the year that you are in. I've been looking at both the documents for this one. This one, I can't find it. And your presentation doesn't say anything about it. Because if you say, for example, I'll take one program just deliberately, just feel it to illustrate what I'm trying to say. If you say, for example, your performance indicator is number of modernization projects completed, then the annual target, which is an estimated performance, as you put it, is 10. So on a quarterly basis, well, how do I measure your performance? Or how does the board itself measure your performance? Are they going to wait for the end of the year to say, no, give us the 10? means the whole year they won't be doing anything. And if we call you on a quarterly basis to come and account, what will be the tool that we're going to use as a portfolio committee to measure our performance on a quarterly basis? Because that's what the treasurer's template requires. That after you have got this strategic objective, performance indicators, and annual target, which you've done, then from there you go to the quarterly targets, which I don't see it anywhere in your document. And that's the basic one. And there's also an expectation that a program, you then illustrate economic classifications, including what has been the audited financial statement for the past 3 years, and then in terms of economic classification, and then going forward in each and every program. So that at least there's an analysis of the performance from a financial point of view of each program, so that when you do an oversight, you are able to say, these are the performance indicators, this is the budget for this performance indicator, and this is how you're performing on a quarterly basis. We can't see that. It's not there anyway. Then how do you do that? I don't understand it, because we're not doing this thing for the first time. But it's like it's a new organization, it's like SAPRA. Even SAPRA was better, you know, because new as they were, but they were able to say certain, I mean, to break down in terms of quarterly targets. That's my fundamental problem here with this exercise. That's my fundamental problem. So I'm not. So it will be very difficult to engage into the ATP because it's incomplete in my view. It's incomplete in my view. But I will just ask a clarity-seeking question, not on the ATP, but on some statements that you've raised in the. If you say, because I was reading the statement, I don't understand it. The NHLS currently owes, currently, which means now as you speak, owes its suppliers approximately $833 million. But then it goes and say, as at the end of October 2017, which means from October 2017 until now, we are unable to pay service providers an amount of $833 million. That's how I interpret it. That's what it means to me. But then you continue and say, however, for the current financial year, but there was this statement that say the NHL currently owes. But then you continue with, however, for the current financial year, NHL has been invoiced $1.2 billion worth of goods and services, and the organization has paid $1.4 billion, more than what has been invoiced. How do you do that? How do you pay it more than what you have been invoiced? What were you paying for the $219 million? Because you are paying on the basis of invoice. And you're saying your invoice was $1.2 billion. And you have paid more than what you have been. I don't understand it. Logically, it doesn't make sense to me. That you have paid in advance $219 million for invoices that you don't have. I see the chair is shaking his head. Fine. But that's what it means to me. That's how I interpret it. So it's confusing me, so I don't understand it. How do you pay service providers without invoices? Because that's literally what it means. That the extra 219 million you've paid without invoices. So it's really confusing, Chair. But there's very little I can engage, unfortunately, on the ATP because it's incomplete as far as I would love to engage it, but it's because of its incompleteness, it becomes very difficult. Where do I start? Thanks.
One shaking my head was not saying. Oh, you mean the chair? Oh, okay, the chair of the board. Okay. No, I think you, it's just unfortunate that you came at the tail end because I didn't want to pronounce it first myself and sound as if I'm taking over the questions that members used to ask. It is really quite confusing and difficult to ask questions in terms of the APP, but I'll only ask one question. It was once, if my memory serves me well, I'll be corrected by members. NHLS once reported, not in your tenure, Chair, if I'm not mistaken, we were questioning the number of technologists which they have passed in the institutions of higher learning, but when they come to you, there is a certain examination that they are to write. And what has been picked up is that it is where the high number of the failure rate is very high. And at that particular time, we requested that we must be furnished about the reason who is failing. The failure rate is in which discipline and which class. We're not going to run away from this because we could read in between lines that it's black, it's African technologists that when they go and write, and it's not only in your field, even we also made, we looked into the engineering sector has got the same, our children have got the same challenge. Now, you're not talking about that. What is it that you have put in place to address that? Because that came to our attention. We raised it with the leadership at that time, and we are picking up that you have got your numbers are very few. There's no improvement in that. As much as they are passing, we were also a bit worried whether whom do we blame? Should we blame the institutions of higher learning? Why should they pass? And when they go to you, they then fail. And the SMMEs that are in this field, they are SMMEs for what? If I can be clarified, you said you have got SMMEs. If I'm not, yeah. So I it's SMMEs in what? What are they producing? They're producing syringes. Are they producing what? Chemicals. These SMMEs, and where are they really located? And who are they? We will always ask who are they, because we have picked up just as a country in the 24 years, black, African, whoever, has been That's why, is it something, a reverse of the gains, or what is it? So, we think that it is important that we raise that so that we understand, as we will be looking into the legislation, as this that was referred to, not to you, in terms of the high level thing, when we look into it, we try to have an understanding. So more, it's just those questions which are maybe outside the your APP. We're done.
So thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks for all the questions and comments. I'll answer some that relate to the board's responsibilities, and then I'll ask Nelisiwe Mkhize to respond to the question of transformation, recruitment and retention and the technologists. And I'll ask Dr. Tim Tucker to respond on the question of training of pathologists and the numbers and other measures that are being taken to attract people to the discipline and secure a strong pipeline that passes, and also to talk to the national research agenda, and then I'll leave the rest to the CEO to respond to as we go through. I think that the first question was the lack of the 2018 data. And Madam Chair, you'll recall that last year we included some of the historic data, including provisional 2018 figures, but the committee indicated to us that those should be kept back for when we report on our performance later in the year. That's why they're absent. In terms of the non-communicable diseases, the NHI is well placed to do the various laboratory tests covering the range of non-communicable diseases. But obviously the NHLS is not a static organization. We have strategic planning exercises in the different pathology disciplines that anticipate the future demand, the developments in technology, and we adapt as we evolve to those situations, much like we did with the HIV epidemic and the TB technologies. So we do that with NCDs. And it is correct that with the NHI, as more South Africans get better access and universal access to improved quality health care, that needs backup by laboratory tests. So the demand for tests will grow, and we are gearing for that potential. And that really leads, in a way, to the second question you asked about equipment and supplies. Are we short? Do we have a staff shortage, and so on? And I think that the message here is that the field of laboratory medicine and laboratory services is not a static one. We are constantly investing in new equipment, improved technologies that give greater efficiencies and value for money, in staff development, and in reshaping and reorganizing the staff to get better value for money. So let me give you just two examples of that. So one example is that with the Listeria outbreak, historically we had a certain capacity. It was about 50 tests a day that we were able to do, but the lessons from the Listeria outbreak and the demands show that we have to increase our capacity to serve what will be a new level of national need. So we are in the process of investing 10 million rand in a new piece of equipment that, for not more staff, can actually do 400 tests in a day. By making the investment, you get efficiencies and economies of scale, where where your unit cost per test goes down, your capacity goes up, but it doesn't increase your staff demand. So there's a constant process of shaping and sizing. We're looking at for example, does every hospital in a city need to be able to be doing all tests for 24 hours? Because the moment you've got a laboratory that has to be open for 24 hours, it's different if it's there for 40 hours and 164 hours. So if you can have one laboratory serving three hospitals and transport the specimens, you can reduce your staff costs and your overtime costs quite substantially to get better value for money. So it's a dynamic process that we were trying to refer to. I think the lessons learned in the listeriosis outbreak, I think, are many and varied. I think that from our perspective and our role as the National Health Laboratory Service, I think there's a concern about the private sector self-regulating, because there were clearly lapses in the self-regulation process. I think from our side, the critical importance of communicating with the public and making sure that as a public institution responsible for the outbreak investigation, that we ensure that the science and the technical information that goes out to the public is timeous and absolutely accurate. And that's why we've had to step in to correct incorrect information that could put the public at risk. I think there are many others, and I'm sure that there have been discussions on that, and we can go into it in greater detail. The question about the performance indicators what's new in the plan, what does new mean? So just to explain that, again, we try not to keep the strategic plan static. We try to evolve and improve it all the time. And so what we've sometimes found is that certain performance indicators are not a good measure of our performance. And therefore, we've brought in a new indicator, either to replace a previous one or that we think provide better measures of the performance of that aspect of the NHLS's work. So when you see new over 14, 15, 16, and then a figure for 17, it means that we first introduced that performance indicator in 2017. We don't have the data before that because it was never in our strategic plan before as a performance indicator. So we hope that the package of performance indicators that we have now is a good representation of how our performance should be measured across all the different dimensions. Where we have historic data, we put it in. But where it wasn't there before, we were not collecting that data. So it's maybe poorly expressed on our part. We should have had a footnote to explain that, and I apologize for that. There's ongoing preparation for the shift from the NICD to NAPISA. And the CEO will talk a bit more to that. In terms of IT infrastructure, we have been investing in it substantially as the board and committed to that. I mentioned some of the changes in the executive management team because of problems in the progress and problems in the lack of return on the investment that we were making. We've reported before our bandwidth was too narrow to carry the platform for our laboratory services reporting and availability. We're expanding the bandwidth, we're investing in new technologies and moving what we call our track care system, which is used from almost the first version up towards the 10th version, which is the most current. And we've got to create the IT systems and the platform to be able to sustain that. So there has been substantial progress, which we'll make a point of reporting in more detail when we come back around about September to report on our performance. Similarly, the Auditor General irregularities, there's been very substantial progress across a number of these areas. Remember, these were self-reported, to the auditors by ourselves when we discovered them, some that led to the suspension of the CEO and CFO and some others subsequent to their suspension that we uncovered as a board and as an executive team, and we've been dealing with that. The question on the SWOT analysis, Madam Chair, I'm going to keep that till the end, because what I can say is that as a board, we looked at the SWOT and we did the titration between the SWOT and the plan to satisfy ourselves that it was there. But I think the nature of the structure and the format here doesn't necessarily lend itself to being able to link this weakness to these actions to address it, or this opportunity to those actions. And I think that's a very salient point. We can go through that if we have time, and we'll show you the link between each item to the others. But if there are specific opportunities or threats or weaknesses that you would like to know about as a committee, and you want to pinpoint those, we can answer to them. It would just take a long time to go through it. I was concerned about the point about the quarterly targets, and that's what I was turning around and shaking my, because my understanding is that the quarterly targets are in the APP, and I just got very worried. So they're not in our PowerPoint presentation, but in the full APP, I was pretty sure we had them there, and we do track them as a board and get quarterly reports. The question of the creditors, I'll leave that to the CEO, but this has to do with the historic debt and the ability to pay creditors. So what we did is that extra $219 million was paying off historic debt to our creditors for which we had already been invoiced. So we were just trying to, what we were trying to express there is that we were able to reduce our historic debt by $219 million by paying what we had procured this year plus $219 million of the historic debt. And our aim is to remove the entire debt over the next 2 years as the Gauteng settlement comes in, because we got into that corner because of the historic underpayments from Gauteng and KZN. And as we settle those, so we are able to clear our creditors, and our aim is to have our creditors at zero, or if you like, paid within 30 to 60 days in that. But we do pay our SMMEs preferentially and upfront within the guidelines that have been set. So I think those are just to respond from my responsibility as the chair to some of the broader strategic and direction questions. I'll ask Nelim Kize to respond on recruitment and retention, technologists, and transformation, where I believe we've done extremely well. And then Dr. Tucker on the research and the pipeline of training pathologists and our measures that we've been busy putting in place, in particular over the past year on that. And then I'll leave it to the CEO to go through a number of other questions that we won't yet have answered.
Thank you. On the issue of recruitment and retention of staff, it's a bit difficult, especially with regards to the specialized disciplines. We have very challenged with, for instance, histopathology and genetics. Those are the fields where we they are not attractive enough for medical students to come in to train as registrars. The other issue is also the restrictions in terms of the numbers that we can train at a particular point in time, because we have approved the numbers that are approved by the HPCSA, which relates to the numbers of qualified professionals that we have. So Tim can expand on the issue of registrars, because he deals mainly with that, that falls under NAPC. With regards to the failure rate of medical technologists,
Yes, it has been an issue, mainly because the board exam, so-called board exam, is outsourced by the HPCSA to another professional body, which is the South African Medical Laboratory Technologies of the Society for Medical Laboratory Technologies. So they are the ones who set exams. So they had not kept up with the current syllabi, which then resulted in students being disadvantaged. So that has been taken up with the HPCSA, and together with the Universities of Technologies and the Council for Higher Education, there is a process that is now has been undertaken in terms of calculating the programs themselves, because even the NQF levels were not in sync. You'd find that there were certificates for technicians, they would spend 18 months, get a certificate that is not recognized anywhere else. Similarly to that board exam, the 3 year plus 1 year, so the 4 years is not recognized. It's only the 3 year, the diploma that is recognized. So that process is ongoing. We're hoping that probably in the coming year or two, we will be able to phase in the new programs that will be controlled by the university. So the Bachelor of Health Science degree has already started. There are a few universities that have started the program where the technologists spend the 4 years and they come out qualified. They don't have to write any other exams. The CPUT here has already graduated some of the technologies that are in the program, that are in the labs for their final year workplace learning program. So we hope that is going to be done for all the categories, lab assistants and medical technicians as well as medical technologies. But the technologies programs have already started, and the old diploma is being phased out.
If you are saying, pardon me, because you've raised something very interesting. If you are saying you will be waiting, so it means you are not going to, you don't have, or it's not within your scope or your system to track, because it means you can still continue. You will only be waiting for HPCA. Don't you have a program? You know why I'm raising this? I'm reminded, sorry, Honourable Members, because this is something in reverse, very strange. Before a black child was to apply to be a medical technologist, do you know that at the time, before 1994, he or she would have to apply to the Minister of Health then to explain himself or herself? I'm not talking about the hearsay. I do have a woman who had, her parents had to go to that because she was a black female at that time. So that's why I'm a bit panicking if you say you are going to wait. You make us to understand that you also have got an interest. And how are you going to exert pressure, or should it be us? Because if it's us, we'll do it. We do it in such a scale that even the department will be uncomfortable. But because we, in this day and age, we can't have medical technologists. And why do you have? Why are you comfortable? You have set HPCA outsourced to another, the future of our children. I'm sorry for taking much time. It's long in the day, but I think it's a question that really we have to ask. Honourable Maisele said, to one of the entities, you must. Now, I must not get a sense that you are relaxed. It will depend on the particular. You know, so that is why I hope that the National Department of Health will then be able to come in this, because this is quite a challenge. 24 years down the line, we're still having these situations. I don't think it is fair. I'm not, if you don't have a response now, It's fine, but we are going to follow up this. In fact, we're also following it up with the National Department of Health. Maybe I'm barking the wrong tree. Those are the people that are supposed to be responding on this because they are oversighting you.
We've noted the concerns, but that was just to mention the steps that have been taken, not that we're not doing anything internally. Internally, there are processes. We are training the numbers. Currently, we have about 260 medical technologists that are in training. Some have written the board exams. They're waiting for the results now. We keep them on the system. And we support them for them to attempt the board exam. Not once, we keep them on the system until they pass. The pass rates have been improving slightly. 2016 we had 55. It was sitting at 55%. Last year, for those that did not make it, who had to write in September, it was sitting at 60%. We're waiting for the results for this current financial year. Tim can respond.
Thank you, Chair. There were a few comments with regard to the registrars and training and the progress on that, and I think that we have some progress in that regard, and I'll try and answer the various questions together. Clearly, the training is a joint mandate of the NHLS and the universities, and the NHLS and the universities of technology, and my colleague has spoken to some of the issues with the universities of technology. Correctly, it's been identified as a problem in terms of the pass rates, and this House has debated that on previous occasions. And we're pleased to inform you that as a board, we've taken this seriously. The board subcommittee that I chair has put in place a specific committee to look at that. A representative of every single discipline, virology, microbiology, anatomical pathology, etc., sits on that expert committee. And they have assisted with an NHLS survey of the registrars to understand their challenges. We've also put in place mechanisms to ensure that there's adequate teaching time for the registrars while they're being trained, and not to wait to the end when there are challenges, but rather to ensure that during their training time they get regular assessments to ensure that that they're progressing. It does also mean that they require adequate access and contact time with senior staff, and there are some disciplines where we have had some losses of senior staff to the extent where the contact time has not been adequate. And so the NHLS has also been making changes so that if a certain university doesn't have, for example, hematologists, we will then second some others to do training there and to support if there are multiple mechanisms to try and get support over different areas to accommodate for that. And I'm afraid I wasn't prepared to give the numbers this evening, Chair. I thought that was at our next meeting, and I will endeavour to give the specific numbers. But I do know that at the latest exams, college exams of the registrars, there was an improvement, and we were happy about that, and we want to see that continue into the future. But I will present that to you, and we obviously are very sensitive about the issues of race and gender and ensuring that there's no bias in that. But we will come back to you with the specifics of that, Chair. With regard to research, the questions on what are we doing on the research side and also how is our research aligned to the NHI developments, I'm pleased to report that there's quite significant progress there. There is a research strategic plan that has emerged out of a research summit that was held a little while ago. We are also seeing that the points made around the innovation, about ensuring that where possible we are able to develop our own point of care tests, to develop our own chemical analyzers, that where possible, and it's not always possible, but where possible and where cost effective, we are investigating the innovation side of things to try and strengthen that. So thank you for pointing that out. I think it is something that we're looking at, and in collaboration with the Department of Science and Technology, there is an innovation summit this year to look at the innovation in the organization and how we might improve that. With regard to NHI alignment, I think that this House can be very comfortable around the fact that a part of the brief of the senior staff is to be part of government task teams, to be part of the various programs that government is rolling out, including NHI. And it is our staff that are often writing up the policy briefs, and part of their KPIs is the policy briefs that they contribute, many of which are linked to NHI as well, ensuring that the NHLS is prepared for NHI, that the NHLS is able to satisfy the clinical needs of the majority of South Africans who need it. So I think that this House can be pleased with the fact that this the various elements as they relate to research and alignment with the national needs are indeed been taken care of. Chair, I think that is a summary of the three or four questions that were asked in my area.
Thanks, Chair. Just to follow on the issue that Dr. Tucker has raised with regard to the NHI and related to the first question about non-communicable diseases increasing its burden by 2030. The Chair has spoken about that, but just to say we are actively participating in the pilot sites, for example. So there's a program that has started now, which is called GP Path Care, which we are involved in, and we're working with the Department of Health to look at a system where GPs get contracted in order to see patients, and we'll be providing the diagnostic services directly through to those GPs. So we're busy setting up this pilot where we'll get our lab information systems aligned to their information systems, so that we can get results immediately. But I think the Department of Health is going to be best placed to talk about how the NHI is going to impact on both the public and the private sector markets. As the NHLS, we're the only ones really who are big enough to be able to take care of the majority of the population. So, you know, currently it's 80%. We'd easily be able to scale up to do 100% of the population. And we have had experience during the strike, for example, where we know that the private sector just does not have the capacity to take care of the majority of the population. So we're making sure that we are going to be able to support the Department of Health in order to ensure that if we need to take care of 100% of the population, we're going to be able to do that. I think the other important thing for with regard to the NHI is that the private sector cannot compare with us with regard to affordability. As you can see from the how efficiently we use our resources and with regard to tariffs, we don't make a profit, so that margin is taken out, and we compete, we're quite effective with regard to that. The issue around the pathology cover, it has been in the strategic plans before, but the effectiveness of that pathology cover hasn't been as good. So what our intention is to make sure when we're talking about pathology cover, isn't necessarily a pathologist everywhere, but that through modern innovation we can use e-health and be able to make sure that if there's a result, it gets a pathologist in a central academic hospital is going to be able to verify that those results are covered or provide that consultant cover. So that's the intention with regard to that. Dr. Tucker has talked about the issue around the research agenda. There was a two-day workshop just during this week where the research strategic plan is being aligned to the NHLS plan, and it will be able to look at the research questions around every single thing. To the issue around our understaffing, the Chair has already responded to say that we use our staff very efficiently. We are undertaking an exercise to look at what's our workload in all the different facilities, and how best do we optimize the use of stuff. Currently we are very tight around the filling of posts, but we have got the certain areas that are a problem. We've prioritized pathologists because we making sure that we get those posts filled in every facility. And we've got a whole HR plan as to how we manage the other posts. The SANUS accreditation, Che, we can provide you the stats as to the different hospitals, different facilities, and how many have been accredited. So, for example, at the central national academic hospitals, it's about 94% are accredited. Now, intention, the plan that we've got is to look at getting all of the central hospitals accredited. We're going to achieve that this year, and then trying to get the provincial tertiary hospitals accredited. Where we've got problems is around the regional and the districts. But I need to make it clear, if we don't have SANUS accreditation, does not mean that the laboratories are not functioning effectively, because SANUS is a sort of accreditation that you don't have to have it at all of the different facilities, but it's what we're trying to move towards. But we've also got a system where if you're not accredited, there's a program called SLIPTA, which means Stepwise Laboratory Quality Improvement Program. So we take the unaccredited facilities through the SLIPTA program, and we've got quite a high rate of compliance with the SLIPTA program. And maybe in our next briefing we can take you through more details of the quality assurance. So when we spoke about the work plan, we very systematically are now trying, we'll cover definitely the higher institutions, and we're trying very rapidly to cover the regional and the district hospital systems as well. But we can give you more details around that. Chief, I think we just need to note the issue around the performance indicators, that they're remaining static. Some of them have to remain static because you're wanting to comply. But I think the points that have been made generally as to be a bit more aspirational around that, we'll take note of that. And definitely in our efforts, we're going to try and go beyond the targets that have been, and the concerns put down here. And that relates to the numbers of the registrars and the technologists and the interns. Those numbers were put there because those were the numbers that were passing. So and we also quite concerned around the pass rates. So there's a whole plan that we're looking at, working together with the universities and the HPCSAs, because I think the point is made, Chair, that we need to dramatically improve it. I mean, part of the equity issues for us, it's important because a lot of our technologists and technicians are women, and it's an area where we need to be able to empower people and train a lot more. So when we report maybe in the quarterly, we need to say what efforts are being made to dramatically improve that and improve the numbers so that we go beyond just what we currently have here. I think that relates to member Ntlantla's points around some of those performance indicators, and I think that we'll go back, review it, and just make sure that in our performance it becomes. The issue around new, over and above what the Chair has said, it was also something that we had asked about. So, for example, where the turnaround time went from 48 hours to 40 hours, then according to the Treasury, it has to be put down as a new target. So I think, again, in reporting, we need to say the turnaround time has now gone to 40 hours, but this is how we performed previously, as the Chair said. And then the field epidemiologists, I stand to correction, Yeche. I thought that one of the issues that of the 14 was because there were some failures which got included in the other class, and now they've gone back to the normal number of field epidemiologists in the NICD. There's a business case that has been prepared on looking at moving NICD to NAPISA and the various options appraisals, and there has been a service provider contracted in order to look at the what model, how many staff, etc. So that's in process. The IT infrastructure, Chair, I think over and above what the Chair has said, is it's been very frustrating because some of those contracts are the ones that have been involved in the disciplinary cases. So it's been quite tricky in sorting out those contracts so that we can now move forward. But all I can say is we're now in a position where a lot of those contracts have been sorted out, and we've now put into place new contracts so that we can start moving forward and hopefully sort out a lot of the IT issues. We're also piggybacking onto government's contracts as well, like the buying of computers and things like that. Yes, so the transversal contracts, like the CETA contracts, will do it. The AG's report check, can I request, we've got a whole, we're going through all those irregularities, and in our next meeting, maybe we can just tell you what we're doing with each one of those irregularities. I've got it here on my computer, but maybe we can just give a formal report on how we're addressing that. And then with regard to recruitment and retention, the chair of the RHRC has commented on that. There's a lot of issues that we're addressing with the unions in order to look at benefits. From a point of view of comparison with the public sector, the benefits for the NHS employees are a lot better. And then, Chair, the issue around gatekeeping initiatives, so basically it's the Department of Health project. They tell us we don't want you to repeat a test, say, within 24 hours. So we then go into our lab information system and we put a rule there. So if a test gets repeated, like say, within 24 hours when it shouldn't, it will automatically reject it. And we're monitoring that now with the rejections. So we started off simply, and we now had another workshop where we're going to look at more rules, and the Department of Health will then tell us, put this rule in, and we will then have that for gatekeeping. I think we've talked about, okay, and then with the insourcing, as we've insourced, according to the agreement we had with the unions, we insourced security, gardening, and cleaning. So we've done gardening, and we've done cleaning, and we now just going to be doing the insourcing of security. Yes, Chair, then the quarterly targets, we have got it in the APP, but I think we take the point. There's some that's done on an annual basis, and then there's others that are done on a quarterly basis. But we take the point, maybe we can just review some of the ones that may only be completed at the end of the year. Our intention is to try and see how quickly we can do it. So we will go back and look at that. And then, Chair, the economic classification and looking at 3-year, that hasn't been included in the strategic plan, but maybe in our reporting we can look at reporting on that. And then with regard to the creditors, I think it's just the language that we use. We shouldn't have said we invoiced and paid. Mm-hmm. So basically we paid previous invoices. So it wasn't on just on the current invoices. So we paid whatever invoices that were in the accruals. So that's what we've been doing. So maybe we just need to look at the language there. And then to just finally
I'm
just
sure you're rounding up.
So yes. So just finally, Chair, this, we've spoken about the innovation summits, but just to say, I mean, our scientists also have been given a lot of awards and recognition for the innovation. So there's a lot of innovation work that's been done and within the NHLS, and perhaps at some time it would be very nice to actually show you some of the innovative things that have been done by our scientists and pathologists.
Madam Chair, I can just conclude by saying that I think there's important messages also about how we write our plan, that we shouldn't just write it for ourselves, but we should make sure it doesn't have the acronyms, is very clear, and we'll keep a close eye on that. What I can say is, as always, the questions have been very insightful, and many of them make us think and go back. And I'm pleased to say that in preparation for today, I went through our notes from last year of all the questions that we were asked and issues we would address. And I think we've done quite well at responding to the issues you raised. And this year you brought up a number of others. So we'll continue to do our homework. I think this question, though, that was raised about the performance indicators is something that you may wish to comment and guide us on. You know, we're constantly trying to improve. So if we said we will get a certain percentage of results done in 48 hours, now we've improved our systems, we've improved our performance. So we tighten the target and we say we want it done within 24 hours, or it was 72 and we now bring it 48. Now we have to call that a new target. So we could have left it at 72 and we would look very good, you know, but it's now become an easy target because we've improved so much. So now we set ourselves a tougher target. And that was the point I tried to make earlier, is that tucked away in here, we've set ourselves challenging targets because we want to do better with the public money entrusted to us, rather than come here and set ourselves such easy targets that we look fantastic, but on the ground we are not delivering because we've given, you know, it's like saying you can have 20 seconds to run 100 meters. But if we've done that now, we want to keep pushing ourselves. And, you know, and you need to guide us how you want us to manage that, because we don't any longer measure what we've done in 48 hours if our new target is 24, because it's just too easy, because we've improved. So that maybe helps to explain, I think, what is a very important question that we had overlooked in the way we'd written it. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I do think that it has been quite a very little bit difficult presentation in terms of how it has been structured, which then it took a lot of time in trying to explain some of the things. The only thing that we will, on behalf of the committee, when you are coming back for reporting, please, if you have managed to deal with outsourcing, and I don't know whether, because when you come back, you must answer this question. In this outsourcing by the for exams, do you have a portion that you pay to that company that is outsourcing, or it's solemnly the examination board that is supposed to do that? Please explain. And when you come back, we want a detailed report on what have been, how far are the things, and what then are you, because it is completely unacceptable. I do think that we will then have to look into that. That's why I'm saying the department will have to answer in terms of this outsourcing by the HPCA, because in my view, it's completely unacceptable, Dr. Pillay. Otherwise, thank you very much. We will write some of the questions, because I have dotted some of the questions which I think that will, and I then get a response on them, and it will encourage even honorable members, they know how to do that, to the office of the secretariat. But thank you very much. Supper is served at the old assembly. For members, you are then invited to join us. Members, transport as yesterday is available. Where are we meeting tomorrow? We are still meeting here tomorrow at 10. I want to sensitize members. Check your SMSs. We have been told what time now, the new times for buses because of the strike. But we are starting tomorrow at 10 in the same venue. Don't use the lifts on that other side. By rain, if you want to